You're listening to the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast with Chicago attorney Dave Scriven Young.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 239 of the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast for June 25th, 2020. My name is Dave Scriven Young, an attorney from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll be your host. This podcast takes you on a daily journey to discover key principles in the areas of marketing, sales, and leadership for attorneys. What follows is audio from last night's Lawyers Emotional Intelligence Book Club. My special guest was Minnesota attorney Robin Wolpert, and we talked about sleep, stress, and well-being, and gave really great information about how sleep can really affect your cognitive ability and really your ability to practice law. Great information. I so appreciate Robin for joining us. If you want to learn more about the Lawyers Emotional Intelligence Book Club, go to facebook.com/lawyersEQ. We go live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central. Hope to see you at next week's session. So here's the audio from last night.
Welcome to the Lawyers Emotional Intelligence Book Club. My name is Dave Scriven Young, a lawyer focusing on litigation, environmental law, and construction law from Chicago, Illinois. We're helping to create the next generation of lawyers with high emotional intelligence through a weekly book club and daily practical posts at facebook.com/lawyersEQ. During our book club discussions, we'll do a deep dive into books that will help us develop emotional intelligence skills, specifically think about how we can begin to use these skills in our law practices. I'll be here live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central for this discussion, and it is a discussion. Please liberally use the box below to ask questions or to make comments. I don't sit here as an expert. On the contrary, I'll be learning along with all of you, and I'm really interested in hearing your opinions and observations. So, welcome to the show, everyone. Good to see you. If you're listening and watching, obviously, in the comments, please let me know where you're from, what you're excited about hearing about today. Today, we're going to be talking about sleep and stress and well-being and how those interact. And so what I'm going to do is just set things up for today with our slides. Hopefully y'all can see what's going on here. Very good. And just so you know a little bit about me, I graduated in 2003 from DePaul, senior counsel at Picar and Abramson in Chicago. I'm a civil litigator. I practice construction law and environmental law. My mission is to identify and share historically correct knowledge and resources, and hopefully an inspiring and entertaining format in order to help others meet and exceed goals and standards in every area of their lives. And I do that, of course, through this book club as well as my podcast, which is the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast, which focuses on marketing, sales, and leadership. And we're going to be talking about emotional intelligence skills today. And this is what we've talked about. So we're going through our book, which is Dr. Rangan Chatterjee's The Stress Solution. And we're in the self-management portion of the emotional intelligence skills. The Stress Solution talks about four different areas in which that can either stress us out or help us with our stress. We could talk about purpose, under which we talked about using affirmations, reframing, gratitude, scheduling your time and morning routines, how to live more, in other words, doing things you love, acting with intention, having a vision, and engaging with others through service. We talked about relationships and how the sense of touch and nurturing relationships can help with our stress. In the last couple of episodes, we talked about the body, eating yourself happy, and making exercise work for you. And today we're going to be talking about mind. So let me introduce our special guest. Our special guest is Robin Wolpert. Let me just bring up her information here. Robin Wolpert is a legal strategist, litigator, criminal defense attorney, and appellate lawyer at Sapentia Law Group in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is chair of Minnesota's Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board, executive counsel of National Conference of Bar Presidents. She is in the American Bar Association House of Delegates and is the past president of the Minnesota State Bar Association. Robin is a former prosecutor and senior counsel at 3M. She received her JD from Cornell School, and a PhD from the University of Chicago. So let's bring Robin on. Robin, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, thanks for joining. I'm really excited to talk about the interconnections between sleep and stress and well-being. And I wonder, just so the audience to know you a little bit better and how things have been going in terms of COVID lifestyle, because like me, you're at a firm. And so I wonder, how are things going working from home and that sort of thing?
Well, I think all of us, when it first started, it was, for me, very stressful. But I think the biggest stress was that all the rules of the game that we knew for litigation or criminal defense, all those rules went out the window. And we were constantly trying to just get information about, for example, how to access our clients who are, detained pending sentencing, just even communicating with clients. And then it turns out, well, which courts are closed? How are we going to get records? How are we going to proceed with, pending trials? It was, all of that was stressful. So I just remember, constantly calling people and really valuing the state bar, because all those small sections and groups, people would tell me what's going on, because otherwise we wouldn't know. So I just, we were talking before how, and we're going to talk about sleep, but I let myself, fall into my natural circadian rhythm. So I am a night owl. And I know the book that we've read for today dismisses a little bit that notion that you have this, a distinctly different rhythm. But I let myself go into my natural circadian rhythm and became my true night owl self, which wasn't really helpful for getting work done. But it certainly got work done, between 2 and 3 in the morning. But I ended up, living with that. But I also know that so many people are scared because they're losing clients or have clients who cannot pay. And so people's livelihoods are at stake. Just think about if you can't make enough money, you can't pay your bills, you have kids. Everyone's lives are upended. And then particularly the next generation, which worries me the most, because they've always been hardest hit by everything. And we'll talk about that later. But just really the next generation of lawyers, particularly those law students, when I go into law school classrooms, even virtually this spring, and just, really hearing their stories. So it's, everyone's experiencing it, but the newest lawyers are always hardest hit.
Yeah, I can't imagine being a law student in this environment, especially, those three L's who, I don't even, did they even take the bar? I don't even know. I don't even think they did. I just can't imagine trying to take law school online. So I feel terrible for that situation. And young lawyers, I mean, this is, mostly with this emotional intelligence book club is all about. This is something that I wish that I had as a young lawyer. And although I love, bar associations and I'm a big proponent, this is not a subject that you hear a lot about. And so I'm so glad that you're able to be here today to talk to us about, a very timely topic, which is sleep and stress and well-being. So, and just so everyone knows in the audience, I mean, typically, I'm running through a slideshow and sort of leading the discussion through the book. What we're going to do today, since, we have a real expert here today, Robin is going to take the lead on the discussion, go through some slides. But as we go along, please let us know in the chat if you have questions or comments on anything that Robin says. We'll stop as we go along, and we'll continue to have this truly be a discussion. So, Robin, if you want to take over, and I'm excited to learn.
Okay. And let's see. Hold on. Oh, there we go. Is everyone seeing that?
I may not actually be working. Sometimes this happens. Anyone who watches, hey, Adam says hi. Lakeisha says hi as well. Okay, now I'm seeing your slides.
Excellent.
Let's bring it up. There we
go.
Okay,
great. Yeah, thank you. So, Dave, what you were saying about your program and emotional intelligence, I also know that that's not a common topic that lawyers focus on, but it's really been the focus of my work because I've learned, through my leadership experience that you can do all the right things, you can be smart, you can work hard, and you know this as a lawyer too. You can do everything you're supposed to do. And then there's still the possibility that you're not going to succeed, either as a leader, as a lawyer, or in any facet in your life. So I became fascinated, particularly as a prosecutor, just understanding the human interface and really making a difference as a prosecutor and understanding humanity. But then as a leader too, getting that extra edge, which is that emotional intelligence, but it's also mastering yourself. So that's what propelled me into sleep and well-being. And so it's one of my favorite topics, but it also extends to bringing the entire field of neuroscience into how we think about managing ourselves and our practices and managing our clients and, creating a pathway for success for our clients. The National Task Force on Lawyer Well-Being says to be a good lawyer, you have to be a healthy lawyer. And all of us know that's true. But the question is, how do we do that? Because we really live in a culture, we practice in a culture that glorifies people for not sleeping, right? So, oh, I'm working so hard. I haven't been sleeping. I'm stressed. All those things, they're seen as a badge of success. And so I think the critical challenge is to upend that way that we think about being hardworking and successful as a lawyer. In fact, what I'm going to tell you about sleep will demonstrate to you that that badge that of courage for not sleeping very much and doing everything it takes for your clients is something that's going to shorten your life. And it actually makes you less cognitively available to serve your client in the way you want to. So, in fact, you have to learn how to manage yourself.
Robin, let me stop you there just to break into the discussion. I can tell you, at the first firm that I was at, I was one of those people, at a very large firm. And actually, there was a partner who was notorious for staying up late and actually just being in the office very late. And I think all of us felt as associates that we had to try to keep up with her as much as possible. And so, knowing this information that we're going to talk about, I think is going to be really helpful to sort of break that shame of not staying late, because it actually could affect you, the next day. So, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Dave, I had that same experience. I started in big law, but understand the sleep literature until maybe like 6 years ago. And so even up to 6 years ago, I was that person who, talked like that and thought that I was just such a, hard worker and look at me, by in 5 hours of sleep. The truth is, I was completely wrong. And so that's why I like to do these presentations so that people know that that's wrong, that's incorrect. And what's more, you're killing yourself by doing it. And so it's really the effort to, when we, if we want to create a cultural change in the profession to make it safe to be healthy, we have to create a space where we can take care of ourselves. And make it completely fine with no stigma that we're getting 8 hours of sleep. Okay? So that's the goal. So, we all know about sleep. We spend a third of our lives doing that. But most of us don't know that almost everything that kills us in the industrialized world is really causally linked with sleep. So, for example, let me tell you a little bit about dementia and go back to October of 2019, it was a huge day in the field of neuroscience because Dr. Laura Lewis at Boston University had just completed and published a set of results that demonstrated the link between sleep and Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's. And it turns out, based on her research, that during deep sleep, our neurons start to synchronize. They all turn on and off at the same time. And when they turn off, the level of blood flow diminishes in your brain, and there's cerebral spinal fluid that goes washing through your brain. It fills the space in your brain, and then it washes out all those toxic waste products, including those toxic waste products which contribute to Alzheimer's. So that doesn't get you. I mean, that's just a really exciting development. But let's set aside Alzheimer's for a minute, and of course, dementia. So stress and anxiety lead to cardiovascular disease and cancer. All of those things are causally linked with sleep or lack of sleep. And in fact, the thing you might want to think of sleep in this way. During wakefulness, we all experience low-level brain damage from being awake. And so we need to sleep to restore our brain health. Of course, sleep and diet are inextricably linked. And that's why, and they're also linked to diabetes. So when you don't get enough sleep, you're not able to regulate your blood sugar in appropriate ways. And that leads to weight gain and also perhaps to type 2 diabetes. So there are lots of physiological repercussions of lack of sleep or even diminished sleep, reduced sleep. It's called short sleeping. And even sleeping 7 hours a night is not sufficient.
So, Robin, is that why when I don't get enough sleep, I want to have that donut and coffee in the morning?
Yes. And the book chapter that you all read today talks about that, that when you're up late, you want to eat sugary things that are not good for you, fatty things, sugary things. And the truth is, not only do you gain weight, but exercise is fruitless. In other words, when you don't get enough sleep, you're not even able to build up the muscle mass that you would normally expect to if you're lifting weights or doing other things. So you can't achieve your fitness goals without sufficient sleep. Now, turning to coronavirus or the COVID pandemic, all of us, as we began this program, talking about the impact on our individual lives. And I'm sure everyone who's on this show, who's listening in, Dave, has had some sort of secondary effects from Corona, if not primary effects, in terms of their own health and well-being. And so when you think about first responders, healthcare workers, they get secondary trauma from just their job. And so their secondary trauma effects from we're a helping profession, helping our clients through this time, and we're also experiencing trauma ourselves. So this is a particularly great time to think about how to manage yourself in a way that enhances your cognitive abilities and restores and promotes your own physical health. So why should we sleep? Well, sleep is a memory aid. So this slide talks about that. Think about your brain as an inbox with all these memories coming into your brain. And if you don't have enough sleep, those memories will just bounce off. You won't remember them. And you've all had the experience where you stayed up way too late and people tell you all sorts of things and you have no memory of it the next day. That's because your brain cannot even accept those memories. But the other piece of sleeping is that it helps to cement those memories. So imagine that your brain is like an inbox and you've got a whole bunch of memories in your inbox. And what you do is it helps to click save on your memory inbox. That's the general function of sleep. Now, the book you read talks about the difference between NREM sleep and REM sleep. So let's just talk first about NREM sleep. So all those emails in your inbox, all those memories in your brain inbox, what happens during NREM sleep is that those memories are moved from that fragile short-term storage site to a safer long-term storage site, all right? So if you want to remember things, okay, they're going to be safely stored in the appropriate areas of your brain during the NREM sleep stage. And the other piece that you need to know about NREM sleep is that most of it occurs earlier in our sleep cycle. So if you go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8 a.m., the bulk of your NREM sleep is going to happen in the first half of this of that 8 hour period. All right. Now, REM sleep, all of us know this as dream sleep. And this is the sleep of wisdom and creativity, of emotional intelligence, of just having emotional resilience. And what happens during REM sleep is that it strengthens and creates neural connections in various disparate parts of your brain. And so ideas that might normally not collide with one another collide. And that's what creates imagination and creativity and wisdom. So that's the benefit of REM sleep. And the other thing you need to know about REM sleep is the majority of it happens later in your sleep cycle. So if you haven't, you know, if you go to bed at midnight, between midnight and 4 a.m., the bulk of your NREM sleep is going to occur in that period. And then from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., the bulk of your REM sleep is going to happen in that time period. You should know that you go back and forth between NREM and REM sleep throughout your 8 hour period. But most of the sleep for NREM occurs early and REM sleep occurs later.
So before you go on, let me just sort of make sure that I understand, because, you know, this is all about, this book club is all about emotional intelligence. And, you know, part of emotional intelligence is often looking at what your response is when you're under a stressful situation. And so, you know, for, you know, and a perfect example is, you know, someone comes into your office and has a problem, or has a problem with your work product, or a client calls and says something, or an opponent calls and says something, you know, mean to you. And, you know, as a lawyer, you know, you have a choice of how to respond, right? And it seems to me that, you know, when you're talking of emotional intelligence only happening during a certain period of your sleep, in order to increase those skills, you have to make sure that you're actually getting that type of sleep that you need.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about the benefit of REM sleep, but a couple of things that you just mentioned. Number one, without sufficient REM sleep, what happens is that you start to, your cerebral cortex isn't in charge anymore. And so what that means is that you've got this fear-based perspective on what you see. And I've experienced it, and I'm aware of it when I experience it now that I know about this. But, you know, when you haven't had enough sleep, you're grumpy, right? And you might like fly off the handle more. But the truth is, you're in a fear-based survival mode, okay, of being. And so you perceive things from that perspective. So that means you don't have the emotional intelligence to understand that when people come to you and perhaps raise concerns or questions or complain about something, you may have a very exaggerated response precisely because you haven't had sleep, the sufficient REM sleep. The other piece of it is your ethical compass is altered. So if you haven't had sufficient sleep, not only do you see things through a fear-based lens, but you're also less likely to behave ethically. So it becomes a lawyer ethics issue in terms of, you know, the way you practice law, and it becomes just generally an ethics issue. And so if you read Matthew Walker's book, Why We Sleep, he makes the business case for having sufficient sleep for everyone. And one of the big points he makes is the increase in unethical behavior that accompanies lack of sleep. So that's one response. Dave, one other point. If you know, we talked about going to bed at midnight, waking up at 8 o'clock. So given the way sleep is distributed, most of your NREM sleep occurs early and most of your REM sleep occurs late. This has significant impact because say I have to get up early. All right. Like say I go to bed at midnight, but I got to get up at 6 o'clock because I've got a hearing or I've got to get to work. You're not just losing 25% of your sleep, okay, when you get up a couple hours early, but you're losing 60 to 90% of your REM sleep, okay, because most of your REM sleep occurs late, right? So that's gonna have a big impact on all the things that come with sufficient REM sleep. And the same thing happens if you, you know, stay up late. So you stay up till 2 a.m. instead of going to bed at midnight. Again, you're losing much more of your NREM sleep than just those 2 hours represent. And so again, you have to keep that in mind when you start, you know, short sleeping or strategizing about short sleeping. I would recommend you don't strategize about short sleeping, but instead strategize about performance-based sleeping, which is a sleep strategy designed not only for you to get sufficient sleep, but do it in a way that enhances your skills that you need. For example, you can strategize about how to best manage your sleep so that you can enhance your performance in sports or mathematics or history or a musical instrument like piano. So I highly recommend reading Matthew Walker's book. Now, going to this slide, this is the most important stuff. If you don't remember anything that I said, remember this. So the failure point for human beings is 16 hours. Remember that. So after 16 hours, your brain begins to fail and you need more than 7 hours of sleep each night. All right. So you've got to get 7.5 to 9 hours of sleep per night to maintain your cognitive performance. But we're going to also talk about your physical health and performance of the physiology of your entire body. Okay. The big thing here, again, if you don't remember anything I said, remember this. The brain is not like a bank, all right? So apparently the way the brain works is that you can't say, okay, I'm going to short sleep today, but I'll make it up for it on the weekend. Don't we all think like that? Apparently your brain is incapable of doing this. We just can't do it. So you can't recover the sleep you've missed. You can't say, oh, I'm going to sleep 12 hours today, and then it'll be okay if I sleep 5 hours tomorrow. Those kinds of things. It just doesn't work. So I think that to me, when I learned this, that was just a game changer for me. Because then I thought, boy, you know, it doesn't sound like I'm able to manage myself very well if I'm going on 5 or 6 hours of sleep, you know, as a lawyer during the week. And then with this whole myth that I can make up for it on the weekend, that myth, you know, is busted. And once it's busted, I think it really, for me, it was a game changer in how I managed myself. So we have a culture, a lawyer culture, that really focuses on alcohol, and it's alcohol-centric. And the big message here is alcohol is a sedative. It knocks you out, but it certainly doesn't induce natural sleep. But the big thing, and I'm sure you've all experienced it, is that it disrupts sleep. So if you've had, you know, a few drinks and then you go to bed, you're waking up during the middle of the night. It is, here's the big thing. It is the most powerful inhibitor of REM sleep. Just remember that. It inhibits REM sleep. So even if you give yourself a sleep opportunity of 8 hours, if you consumed alcohol, it's still in your system and it's suppressing your REM sleep. This is huge. You know, it's a huge barrier, not only to cognitive function and performance, but your entire physiology. So the joke is, you know, Matthew Walker's book talks about, well, you know, all of us like happy hours. When should we be happy having happy hours? And his recommendation is, well, you should be having happy hours around like noon to two. So that would be definitely a cultural disruption to the legal profession. But keep this in mind, that it's going to disrupt your REM sleep. You're going to feel it. It's just going to knock you out. And in fact, you know what everyone knows what the DTs are, you know, a characteristic of alcoholism. And what DTs are actually are all those memories that are coming to life during your dream state. That's what they are. Okay. That's how much your dream state has been suppressed if you are subject to alcoholism. So just keep that in mind. Again, another, you know, another game changer for the profession is that you're inhibiting and hurting yourself cognitively and physically by consuming alcohol.
Yeah.
In a way to regularly disrupt your sleep.
It's amazing. I mean, this research really, I mean, it is a game changer because if you think about any, you know, bar association event that you've been to, you know, there is alcohol there, right? And what's fascinating to me is, so I've sat on a few wellness committees in my time. And when alcohol is mentioned, it's mentioned mostly as, you know, well, we need to be careful because some people, can be addicted to alcohol, can have a problem. And as a result, we need to, make sure there's alternatives to alcohol for those people that, can't drink for whatever reason. But this research says, well, you should affirmatively stay away from it, at least, during, the late hours or even the evening hours, because it can actually ruin your sleep and can ruin your health, no matter whether you become addicted or not.
Exactly. And, I should have mentioned, the game-changing ABA studies that came out in 2016, again, were a game changer because we didn't really know the statistics regarding alcoholism and the legal profession. Well, it turns out that the legal profession is the most unhealthy of all professions to our health. And part of it is the mental health challenge. Part of it is the alcoholism challenges. So, for example, the law student study that came out that year in 2016, a quarter of law students are at risk for alcoholism. They don't go into law school this way, but they are part of a culture that starts in law school and come out this way. And then if you look at the general population of lawyers, 21% of all lawyers are at risk for alcoholism compared to 6.4% of people in the general population. And again, our newest lawyers are hardest hit because they are a whopping 32%, at risk for alcoholism compared to more senior attorneys. And so, the same kind of trends extend for mental health. And so I think that once the ABA studies came out in 2016, we had a much better understanding of the risks associated with being a lawyer and the culture of the legal profession. From the sleep angle, what we're saying is not only is it, being a lawyer hazardous to your health, but this one aspect, consuming alcohol, if you don't do it, around lunchtime and stop at 2 o'clock, it's going to still be in your bloodstream when you want to go to bed. It's still going to inhibit your REM sleep.
Fascinating. Well, before you go on, I just wanted to say hello to some of our viewers. We have Ed watching in from the Twitch channel, Adam and Lakeisha watching in from Facebook, as well as Steve and Kathy. So hello to all of you. And again, if you have specific questions about sleep, feel free to, or if you have comments, please let us know in the comments box, wherever you are watching today.
All right, so let me just go on to a couple more ideas. So driving, the big thing about driving is that if you're, if you're sleep deprived, okay, that is going to be a much more likely cause of any vehicular accidents than alcohol consumption. This is because, if you've consumed alcohol, you may delay your response when you're driving, but you don't respond at all when you're sleep deprived. Okay, if you have one of those micro sleep moments, you're not gonna respond at all. And so that's why Matthew Walker warns that driving drowsy is worse than driving drunk. And that's what the data show. So again, we all drive, we drive our kids around, and we do all sorts of things when we haven't had sufficient sleep. And this again, another game changer, just even, 7 hours of sleep a night is sufficient to inhibit our performance. Caffeine, again, this is part of our culture. I am a Mountain Dew drinker. and I am not a coffee drinker, but what happens with sleep and the sleep pressure that builds up, that adenosine that builds up in your brain over the course of a day creates that sleep pressure that helps you fall asleep, initiate sleep, and stay asleep. But of course, caffeine is a huge inhibitor. And so again, like alcohol, caffeine has a quarter life where if you've, consumed a cup of coffee at noon, it's, quarter of it is still in your bloodstream 12 hours later, another inhibitor to either initiating sleep or staying asleep. So these are things that you can do, you know, information you can use to manage yourself. Mental health. So lack of sleep contributes to all mental health challenges. And again, being a lawyer, we are part of the most hazardous profession to our health, not only in terms of the risk of alcoholism and chemical dependency, but also in terms of mental health risks. And again, the ABA studies from 2016 of law students as well as lawyers indicates that our newest lawyers are hardest hit. So insufficient sleep, again, is inextricably linked with all issues of mental health. LED lights, so we all sit there. So think of our culture. We drink at receptions, we brag about not getting enough sleep, and we drive all around to, you know, do our jobs, and we're tied to our LED devices. And again, this is another thing that disrupts our sleep cycle. So if you're in front of blue lights, LED lights, it's going to wind back our circadian rhythm. And so again, it's going to be harder to fall asleep, or once we fall asleep, to stay asleep. So that goes for iPads, iPhones, computers, all of that.
And that's a hard thing to do, though, because, you know, it's like as lawyers, you feel like you have to stay connected at all times. And I know that I'm guilty of it. I'm sure a lot of people watching are, you know, you do that last second. Well, let me just check the email to make sure that nothing came in, as if people are really emailing you at, you know, 11, 12. I mean, I guess at some firms they do. But you just feel like you don't want to miss out. So you got to check your email one last time before you close your eyes to go to sleep. And it's such a hard thing to do. But it's something that's very important to do.
Yep. And a lot of, you know, when I have discussions with newer lawyers, we talk about how to create the space to protect your own well-being. And so part of it is setting boundaries with clients up front in a way that respects your clients and also recognizes that they have very important needs and that you're going to go all out for them. But at the same time, explaining to them that you need to have time carved out for your own personal life and health, because if you really want to give them your best work will come if you've set those boundaries. So that's just, you know, one tip that I have a lot of discussions about with new lawyers, is how to create the space to make it possible to practice law and also be healthy. So that's one thing that we talk about, is expectations with your coworkers as well as your clients, and set those boundaries, meaning on the weekends, I'm generally unavailable. You know, I'm with my family. And if I'm doing those kinds of things and getting sufficient sleep, that means when I work during the week, I'm going to be giving you my best work product. Okay. So those are some of the things that we talk about with the newer lawyers.
Well, and let me just jump in on that point, because it's so important to have a culture in your firm that respects things like well-being and that sort of thing. And it's great, you know. Part of what I do is, you know, I try to train newer lawyers through programs like this, and hope that, you know, one day when they become, you know, leaders in their law firms, or if they're on a wellness committee or something of that nature, that they actually, you know, apply some of this and try to change the culture of the firm, try to change the culture of the profession, and maybe even just a small way to ensure that, you know, these things are respected and noticed in terms of making sure that you're able to get enough sleep and cutting off emails at a certain time. You know, of course, you know, look, there's always emergencies, things can happen. You know, sometimes you're working on a brief late because, you know, for whatever reason, maybe you didn't get the information until later, you're working on a TRO or something like that. But that is definitely the exception and should not be the rule. And it's a culture shift, as you say.
Yep. Yep. And the National Task Force on Lawyer Wellbeing has, you know, their report is really there to create a cultural change in the profession because our lives and health depend on it. And part of that is getting information to people so they know. So I was one of those people who thought, you know, the shorter I sleep, the more I'm going to be able to work and serve my clients. And that was wrong. And I was also one of those people who thought, well, you know, I can make up for it on the weekends. So I'm going to work really hard now, but I'm fine because I'm going to be working on the weekends. One of the big things you learn from Matthew Walker's book is that we are all impaired about how impaired we are by lack of sleep. So in other words, we're like the person who's consumed a little bit too much alcohol and says, give me the keys to the car, I'm fine. That's the way we are with sleep. In other words, we're so used to underperformance cognitively and physiologically that we don't even know how impaired we are by lack of sleep. So that's why I think getting this information out to people is an eye opener. So sleep strategies. So we all want to know how we can enhance our performance and manage ourselves. So the biggest thing is sticking to a sleep schedule, going to bed and waking up at the same time. So regularity is a big deal in terms of being able to initiate sleep and then stay asleep. Now, everyone knows about naps, and naps can be, you know, 20 minutes to half an hour nap in the afternoon. Those kinds of naps can enhance and restore cognitive performance. But you shouldn't be napping if you can't fall asleep at night, because that's just going to disrupt your schedule. So keep that in mind. Couple other strategies. So exercising and caffeine and nicotine are all things that are going to inhibit your ability to initiate sleep and stay asleep. So make sure that you manage and monitor that kind of behavior. And we've talked about alcohol, all right? And all I will say is don't do it if you want to be creative and have emotional intelligence and have, you know, maintain your physical health. You know, we didn't talk about some of the, you know, the details of the physical health, but your book chapter that you read for today talked about that study from the Surrey Sleep Research Institute. And I really was glad to see that because I thought that was shocking. So if you remember, there was a group of people who were part of this study. They were healthy young men and women who were getting 8.5 hours of sleep. And then they were sleep restricted to 6 hours of sleep for 1 week. And then the researchers compared their gene profiles from the time that they were getting 8.5 hours of sleep versus the time they were getting 6 hours of sleep. And they found that the genetic profile of the participants was distorted. Now get this. And this is also something that you can see in Walker's TED Talk because he highlights this. So what's the genetic profile and what's been distorted? Well, half of the genes, okay, of these participants, they focused on 711 genes, and half the genes were amplified as a result of getting less sleep. And the other half were either diminished or entirely shut down. Now, what are the genes that were amplified? Well, the increased activity of those genes are the genes that are linked to chronic inflammation, cellular stress, tumor growth, factors that cause cardiovascular disease. And then the genes that are turned down or entirely off are those genes that help maintain a stable metabolism and optimal immune responses, including regulation of killer cells, okay? Those cells that go after and attack cancer. That's stunning, just stunning. And that's just going from 8.5 to 6 hours of sleep for 1 week. So, you know, after seeing studies like that, you know, I'm a big proponent of getting 8 hours of sleep a night. So let's go to some more sleep strategies. Avoid large meals and beverages late at night because that interferes with sleep. Avoid, if possible, medications that delay or disrupt sleep. We talked about the naps. Don't take naps after 3 p.m. or longer naps because then it's going to disrupt sleep. But, and the other big thing about naps is if you sleep like 6 hours and then count on a nap to make up for the fact that you only got 6 hours of sleep, naps aren't really designed for that. And so it's going to just continue to be a source of problem in terms of initiating sleep at night. Now, some of these things about sleep I think are interesting, like sleep in a dark, cool, gadget-free room. So we often, some of us, and I don't do this, I've never done this, but I know a lot of people sleep with their phone next to their bed. And so apparently that trains you, the fact that you have-
I do that.
Bedroom, yeah, if you have activity in your bedroom, like you're using your phone in your bedroom, or say you engage in activity in your bedroom, you're training yourself that your bedroom is actually a place of activity and not a place of sleep. So getting rid of your gadgets from your bedroom and designating it as a space where you sleep is something that psychologically is significant for helping you sleep. A cool room of 65 degrees, we need to cool our core temperature in order to enhance the chances of initiating and staying asleep. Another sleep strategy is don't use sleeping pills because they're just like alcohol. They knock you out, they sedate you, but they don't initiate natural sleep. And then the final thing is consider sleep divorce. And I really like the whole idea of sleep divorce because, so my husband is someone who has been known to snore loudly or, sometimes utters things in the middle of the night. And that wakes me up. And so there's probably a lot of you out there who have a partner who sleeps that way. Or maybe you're that person. You may be that person. And you've been told you're that person, but you have not acknowledged that you're that person. Well, one thing to do is consider sleep divorce. So it turns out that most couples actually who start in the same bed end up in different beds by the end of the night. And so it's more common than you think. And the benefit of it is that you actually get the sleep you need. And a lot of people think, well, that's going to reduce my ability to be intimate with my partner. But it turns out that if you've had enough sleep, it enhances your interest in being intimate. So actually, there are really few downsides to sleep divorce. So that's just another, sleep strategy to consider.
That's fascinating. Before you go on, let's unpack a couple of those, a couple of those things. So first of all, with the, the recommendation of getting 8 hours. So this is something that has interested me for quite a long time because when you talk to different health experts or people that are on podcasts and that sort of thing, they always tell you, well, yeah, you can get anywhere from 6 to 8.5 and you'll be fine because every person is different. So like, I don't know, the example that I always remember is like Bill Clinton, I think was the example of somebody who, he always said, well, he doesn't need 8 hours of sleep. He was fine on 6. So it's fascinating to me that the research actually bears out that eight hours is, the number. And that it may not matter in terms of, from person to person, but the health benefits seem to bear out the 8 hour number.
Yeah. And also just even sleeping 7 hours a night for a week makes you as cognitively dysfunctional as if you pulled an all-nighter. And so, and the other piece of it is, so even a small reduction has a huge impact. But the other thing is, again, we are like that person who's consumed alcohol and says, I'm fine, give me the keys. We are impaired about being impaired. We're not able to assess the impact of lack of sleep on us. And so when people say, I only need 6 hours or I'm fine with 7 or 6.5, you're so cognitively impaired, you can't judge that. So you should discount it.
Wow. We also got a commenter, Kathy, she says, so this is going back to your point about having your phone next to you. She says that's why she says no TV in the bedroom. And it's the same reason that she tells her students not to study on their bed, because you know, you want to make it a place to sleep, not a place to do other things.
Yep. And then the thing to think about is, you know, when you're younger, you obviously need a lot more sleep, and you have the ability actually to fall asleep much easier when you're younger than older. And not only do you fall asleep easier, but you stay asleep much better. And you're also, if there are these sleep spindles that form during those huge troughs in REM and NREM sleep. And the younger you are, when you're younger, you're really able to get deep, deep sleep. And that's the benefit of youth. When you're older, if you want to get, you know, those, the depths, the real benefits of NREM and REM sleep, you've got to start with these sleep strategies. But when you're younger, so if you're a student in college, or if you're a young person in law school, these things may not seem as, you know, relevant to you right now, because you probably haven't hit that age where it starts to impact you. But definitely, if you're interested in your, you know, the different challenges for sleep based on how old you are, from an infant to a toddler to a young kid to a teenager to young adult to an older adult, you know, I highly recommend reading Matthew Walker's book, because that will give you a sense of what the challenges are for your age group.
Fascinating. And then to the last point of the sleep divorce. So my wife's going to be mad for me telling this story, but for years and years, she made fun of me, you know, not lighthearted, you know, making fun about, you know, that I snore sometimes. And mm-hmm. I was getting very nervous about the fact that I didn't think I was getting good sleep. And so I'm big into apps. I have an app for, you know, I learned how to play the piano via app. I'm teaching my dog, behaviors via app. So I'm big into apps. So I got the sleep app. And the way it works is it actually records movement. And then it also actually records when you're snoring. And so like anything that happens during the night, it records. So, you know, I should have told my wife that I was doing it, but I didn't, because I didn't recognize what the real problem was. But when I went back and listened to the audio, I realized that, yes, I was snoring, but my wife was snoring a lot more than I was.
So, I know, I have a same story, Dave, because I'll tell my husband, boy, you are like the noisiest sleeper I know. But then he'll say to me once in a while, you know, once in a while you snore. Like, really?
Really? Yeah. No, I think it's definitely true in my case. And I know I snore, don't get me wrong. But yeah, that's pretty funny. And the one thing that I always see that is the beds where you can make the head go up or down, mm-hmm. depending. Mm-hmm. And we have a bed that doesn't do individual ones, but the whole thing goes up and down. And it does help a little bit to elevate the head. But yeah, you sleep divorce. I don't know if my wife would consider it, but certainly snoring is a bigger problem than people realize.
Yep. So the bottom line here is, sleep is the single most effective thing we can do for our health, for our brain and body health each day. And that's the end of my presentation.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I mean, this is really mind-blowing material that I think everyone needs to know about. So we're going to just continue the discussion for a few more minutes. I'm going to run through some of the other slides that I had from the book. But if you have other questions for Robin in the chat, or other comments, please let us know. We have someone in the comment who says, everyone snores, even babies. I don't know whether that's true or not, but very well could be. And so let me try to bring up my slide deck just to kind of put a cap on the discussion here. So Let me find. So, oh, the one thing I did want to talk about, Robin, was the night owl principle. And you said you were a night owl. My wife is also a night owl. And so I wonder if, you know, what sort of if you believe Dr. Chatterjee that there's really no such thing as a night owl. You know, the one thing I think it was in the chapter where he talks about, you know, mm-hmm. was a study where, or maybe it wasn't a study, but it was just like people who like go camping and they're usually, you know, at home, usually a night owl, but you know, when they go camping, everyone goes to sleep around the same time, which, you know, I guess makes sense at some point, but I wonder what your perspective is on that.
Well, you know, I saw that in the chapter you read, and then I also went back and looked at Matthew Walker's book about what he calls morning light larks and night owls. And what he says is that it's genetically determined. Your circadian rhythm is genetically determined. And about 40% of us are morning larks and another 30% are night owls. And so, you know, the professional world is structured, the way lawyers' world is structured, it's structured to favor morning larks. Of course, we're supposed to all be at work very early. And so what he talks about is that if you're someone who's more of a night owl, you know, your peak performance is most likely going to happen for work anyway. Your peak performance is probably going to happen outside of work hours. And so you don't get to, you know, demonstrate, you know, your value to a company or your value to your clients where everyone can see it. So it really does hurt your, it not only is the work, you know, not only is the day structured that doesn't fit with the way your body is working, but it inhibits you to show people, you know, how valuable you are. And then you're also subject to that stigma of laziness. So if I show up in the office at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, you know, people are gonna think, boy, you are so lazy, you slept in, but they don't know that I was up till 2, for example, okay? And so there is a stigma associated with it. So I did see what was in your chapter. I am, because I haven't done the research myself, I cannot comment otherwise.
Makes sense. One of the other things that he talks about in the, Dr. Chatterjee talks about in the chapter is eating and how to eat in rhythm. And one of the things that he talks about is, you know, eating food within a 12-hour window. You know, outside of that window, drinking, you know, water, tea. He mentions coffee, which I found interesting. I guess he means decaffeinated coffee. One of the questions that we got in the chat is, are there foods to eat that improve or help with sleep? We know that alcohol may inhibit sleep or alter your sleep. Are there specific foods that can help you sleep?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, but that is an excellent question. I haven't read anything that specifically says these are the foods. I know what to avoid. Like, we all know what to avoid, but in terms of something that helps, I don't know.
How about warm milk?
Oh, I don't know.
It's chamomile tea. I don't know. I don't pretend to be a scientist or a medical expert. All I know is that on TV, when someone can't sleep, they have warm milk. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Yeah. Although one thing that actually keeps you awake is drinking any liquid before going to bed, because of course you're going to wake up in the middle of the night to use the restroom. And so not only will you ensure that you're going to probably stub your toe in the dark or hurt yourself in some way, but you're going to be interrupting your sleep. So, yeah.
Great. And then, you know, finally, maybe he talks about, you know, what to do when you're having a bad day. And I found this part of the chapter very interesting because, you know, oftentimes what people do is, you know, if you have a bad day, maybe you're going to go through the drive-thru or you're going to get a candy bar, or you're going to have a beer, or you're going to have a big soda, or you're going to do something that is not good for you. And so what he actually recommends is getting sleep. So, you know, something like, you know, lighting candles, reading a book or a magazine, staying away from, you know, screens. having a hot bath and then going to sleep as opposed to doing something that is, you know, bad for you.
Yep. And then that hot bath actually is something that helps you reduce your core body temperature, which helps to induce sleep. So, you know, all those things are helpful. They're all in line with the sleep strategies we were talking about.
Absolutely. So, you know, what we always do on the book club is, as we wrap up, is we talk about some weekly action items, some things that you might want to do to help you. Dr. Chatterjee says to perfect your body clock routine, but really it's to help manage or use sleep in a way that's going to help you de-stress and help your well-being. So pick one of the things that Robin and I talked about today to do better for yourself, because obviously, you know, I mean, the information that Robin has given us is amazing in terms of, you know, not sleeping can really hurt our performance. And we really need to work on changing that culture of our profession from thinking that, you know, the less we sleep, the better, because there are more billable hours, more, you know, we're able to respond to clients quicker. But on the other hand, it really does hurt us from doing all of those things. Just wanted to go through a little bit through next week. Next week, we're going to go through chapter 10 of Dr. Chatterjee's book. It's called Technology Overload, speaking of technology. And our guest host is going to be Ian Hugh. He's an attorney from Ontario, Canada. He's a blogger and board member of the ABA Tech Show. So that should be a really fascinating discussion as well. So Robin, any sort of parting thoughts before we leave our folks today?
I think the only parting thought is just get comfortable knowing that the information that we've all been raised with is wrong. So we've been raised to believe that we can get along on less sleep than we need. You know, we've been believe that if we that means that we're working harder and we should be proud of ourselves. You know, just let those things go. Now that you're armed with information that's accurate, the best information in the field of neuroscience, leverage it and go enhance your performance. And don't feel bad that you were dumb, because all of us have been dumb about these things and we didn't know. And now we know, so now we can do something about it.
Exactly. All right, well, Robin, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing all this great information.
You are welcome.
And as we depart, as always, just remember that emotional intelligence is necessary for all lawyers, and we can learn these skills together. Thanks, Robin, again. And everyone, really have a great night. Take care.
Bye, Dave.
Bye, Robin.